Thanks a lot. I really was a lucky guy this morning, because when I was going through my presentation again, I discovered that I had left out the S. Without even knowing how important it was, I put it there. So thank you, Guy, so much for all you did. I never was your student. You never were my boss. And I must say, I'm still slightly intimidated, as I was throughout my life, by your scholarship, depths of thought, and rhetoric power. As Jane this morning mentioned, you went way beyond just the laws in the books. You ventured into the underlying deep policy issues. And you highlighted that the traditional focus on the 1951 convention might be too narrow to really tackle the present issues. And the present issues, of course, are an unprecedented displacement crisis. And what I would like to discuss here very shortly is whether the World Humanitarian Summit, which will take place in about 5 weeks in Istanbul, will provide a forum that will address some of the questions that were already highlighted this morning. An unprecedented crisis it is, of course, in terms of numbers. You all know them, even though we often fail to realize how many people actually are displaced, besides conflict, by disasters triggered by natural hazards. 26 million on average per year, that's one person per second. That's amazing. But I think the crisis had also to do with the fact that, unlike in the past, where during the Cold War we had a large number of refugees but much less IDPs, or unlike in the years after 2000, when we had lots of IDPs but less refugees, we have large numbers both internally and across borders. It's a humanitarian crisis, a protection crisis, a funding crisis, a political crisis. I don't need to explain that. And the question really is the World Humanitarian Summit an opportunity to address these crises, or will it be a missed opportunity? What is the World Humanitarian Summit? It was launched in 2012 by the Secretary General, came out very much of OCHA. It was conceived not as an intergovernmental process, but as a multi-stakeholder process. Stakeholders from affected communities, NGOs, both north, south, governments, regional organizations, whoever. And the World Humanitarian Summit prides itself of having reached more than 23,000 people in 153 countries. Some critically would ask, yes, but not 153 countries, because governments often felt left out to some extent. I'll come back to that. Very general goals: reaffirm our commitment to humanitarian principles, nobody has a problem with that. Initiate actions and commitments which enable countries and communities to prepare for and respond to crises and be more resilient to shocks. Good enough, but what exactly does it mean? And share best practices in this regard. The regional consultations led to a global consultation last October in Geneva. And all of this resulted in a report by the Secretary General for the World Humanitarian Summit entitled One Humanity, Shared Responsibility. And as I said, the summit will take place in about 5 weeks. And then what will be the next steps? Question mark. Again, I will come back to that. Is this whole process, and you've seen how broadly conceived it was, is it relevant for our issues? refugees, internally displaced persons, displaced people in general. During most of the consultations, one must say it was only a marginal issue. During the second consultation, in covering Eastern and Southern Africa, participants really wanted to talk about displacement in all its forms. But it was not really on the agenda. So if you look at that report, you find some traces, but it was not really taken very seriously. And it didn't really improve throughout many of the consultations, but then still people wanted to talk about it. And the good news is that the Secretary General has understood that. And if you're looking at his report, there are a lot of issues that are relevant to our discussions here. The Secretary General identified 5 core responsibilities. Responsibilities for all the stakeholders, the international community, the states, the humanitarian actors, the NGOs, the communities, etc. 5 core responsibilities of all of us, many of them related to conflict, prevent and end conflict, respect the rules of war, humanitarian law, basically. But then, core responsibility 3, leave no one behind, directly addresses the issue of displacement of refugees, of IDPs, of people displaced by disasters. And responsibility 4, working differently to end need, to some extent is also relevant for us. Invest in humanity refers to the financial mechanisms. I leave that out. Of course, not because it's unimportant, it's key. No action without money. But let me look and assess what the report says about core responsibilities 3 and 4. One first point is reduce forced internal displacement by 2030. And there, the key proposal, so to say, is to reduce the number of IDPs in protracted situations by 50% till 2030, instead of managing caseloads indefinitely. Well, I think that's an important issue. It's important because if you're looking at protracted IDP situations, and they are a problem from different perspectives. Of course, a huge humanitarian problem, we all know that, I don't need to explain in detail, but much more of that. If you have large numbers of IDPs, then we're also talking about human rights issues. People in protracted displacement are marginalized, they are discriminated against, and Jaloka Beyani, the Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights of IDPs, could say much more about that. There are a development challenge. If you're traveling to Mogadishu, where I've recently been, and you see that about 40% of the population there are living in squalid IDP camps, in a situation where the country tries to rebuild, it is a development challenge. And of course, it's also a financial problem, because we urgently need the money to address the humanitarian needs of all the newly displaced. And the money is largely insufficient because the huge numbers, the 60 million we're talking about, are not so much due just to new displacement. The largest number are the people who are in protracted displacement for 5 years, for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. And unless we can reduce that caseload, I think we'll never be able to address the financial, the funding challenges. So that's a good idea. And I think it's an idea that is new in the discussions of the UN and the international system, because it brings together, of course, humanitarian and development actors They have been complaining about the humanitarian development gap for decades without making any progress. The idea is to integrate, for instance, internal displacement into development plans, to integrate IDPs into the national safety nets, into the national service delivery, and not keep them apart and have humanitarian action looking at them at the separate caseload instead of being citizens entitled to exactly the same kind of assistance and support as the rest of the population in need. It's about the promotion of self-reliance rather than creating situations of dependency over decades by inter alia traditional approaches to humanitarian assistance. The Secretary General report also talks about sharing responsibility for large movements of refugees. What of course, says and has to say, and I guess Volker and his people had some input into that paragraph, is the need for a renewed global commitment to the international protection framework for refugees and asylum seekers, commitment to uphold the principle of non-refoulement, to uphold the rights of refugees enshrined in human rights law in the 1951 convention, etc., etc. But what is going beyond what you would expect him to say really is the call for a new international cooperation framework on predictable and equitable responsibility sharing to address major refugee movements, as is said in the text. Unfortunately, unlike this the issue of the reduction of number of IDPs in protracted situation, the report does not really go into any kind of detail regarding how such an international cooperation framework could look like. The report basically is referring to the General Assembly high-level meeting on addressing large movements of refugees and migrants, which will take place mid-December. But still, it's on the agenda. It's on the agenda beyond the EU, beyond the countries involved in dealing with the Syria refugee crisis. And then, also innovative for a UN text, prepare for cross-border displacement due to disasters and climate change. The large numbers I was referring to here, promoting the idea not of creating any kind of climate refugee status. Journalists are still pushing that idea. But rather promoting the idea that what we would need is national legislation allowing to admit disaster displaced persons, cross-border disaster displaced persons on the basis of migration law, of temporary protection, humanitarian visa kind of frameworks, and then regional cooperation frameworks to prepare countries to receive and protect cross-border disaster displaced persons. Something that probably has come out quite a lot from the past 3 years of the work by the Nansen Initiative, and also some signals in Paris at the COP 21, where it was not able to really solve the issue of disaster displaced persons in the context of climate change, but at least the decision was taken to create a kind of task force that should develop recommendations in this regard. Other points here: ensure adequate support to host countries and communities. In a way, with regard to support to host countries and communities, recognizing, even though we don't like that word, that displaced persons can be a burden. I think we have to be realistic on that. Not the burden as it's abused in political discussions, but there is evidence that the resilience of host communities can be undermined by the presence of large numbers of IDPs and refugees. And again, the traditional approach, all the support goes to the beneficiaries, the IDPs, the refugees. And now we have learned that we need also to give a little bit to the host communities, because otherwise we will create conflict. That's very much what we are doing nowadays. Does not really work. So I think to be realistic in this regard, what it means to provide support also to host countries and communities enhances this idea of shared responsibility. Addressing migrants' vulnerabilities, there is also a part on migrants, but what is interesting for our discussions here is the call to provide more regular and legal opportunities for lawful migration. You all know that we are talking about mixed flows. You all know that people in need of protection abroad would have much safer journeys if there would be kind of opportunities for legal migration. And the Secretary General suggests here the use of humanitarian visa and temporary protection for those not covered by the Refugee Convention. And then also important, his call to end statelessness in the next decade. And again, I think Volker had some hand in that. Going on, core responsibilities for change people's lives, from delivering aid to ending needs. Yes, humanitarian action is very much about delivering aid. And the idea here is, that's the third point here, not so much to look at short-term assistance, but rather think about outcomes and to deliver them collectively, meaning with all the relevant actors, and that's very much transcending the humanitarian development divide. I'm not using GAP here, because GAP alludes to the idea of a sequence. There's a humanitarian phase and then a development phase. The idea here rather is to work together from the beginning on, which would mean in the analysis of the Secretary General to create joint analysis of what the problem is based on data and analysis, and very much a move away from individual short-term projects. And that's one of the problems we have with the funding. Humanitarian projects are always one-year projects. Are we talking about protracted situations? 5 years? How can you solve them with one-year time horizon? It's about looking at what should be the outcome. So it's about multi-year plans, also for humanitarians. It's about thinking in terms of food, not so much how much food are we going to distribute next year, but how can we reduce food insecurity over the next 5 years? Not giving up food distribution, but working on making food distribution less necessary over that time. And then finance those collective outcomes, meaning putting very much the humanitarian pots and the development pots with money together. So, how should we assess this? I personally agree with a lot of what I've just presented. I do think that this will not solve all the problems, but it will help us to move ahead. There are good ideas, innovative ideas. What is important is that the report takes a holistic approach, bringing together multiple strands of discussion. There is critique of traditional humanitarian action, and I think it's justified. And as I said, it is a process addressing the humanitarian development divide. So much positive. But I doubt whether this will be more than just a good report. And this has to do with the World Humanitarian Summit process. The whole process has been very problematic. It has unclear goals from the beginning on. You saw them and you felt that I was not too impressed by the language of those goals. It was a process that in many regards was flawed. It was very much top-down. I mentioned incidences of people really wanted to talk about things and they were not really allowed to do that. Insufficient involvement of governments. The international system still is based on governments, whether we like it or not. And then, and that's also a critique of the report, I feel that the protection perspective regarding displacement is largely absent. It's weak. It's very strong in responsibility 2 on humanitarian law, but it's largely absent when we're talking about responsibility 3 and 4, even though human rights-based approaches there would really have been very important. But my strongest critique is the unclear outcome. What is expected from participants in Istanbul is making commitments. Will they make commitments? Because you're making commitments if you're part of basically a negotiated process, when you know what the other one is offering. Out in the blue, I wouldn't make any commitments. And that's what I fear states will make. Not real commitments. And there is a lack of vision on follow-up. What we are told is there will be a nice document, but it's not a negotiated document. So what is it? Okay. The jury is out. Maybe I'm too pessimistic. Maybe Istanbul will be a big success. Maybe it will be a mischance because, as I said, the report says many good things. And I think, to me, the key points with really a transformative potential, the ones we should focus on despite or regardless what's coming out of Istanbul, is really the idea of moving from individual short-term projects to collective outcomes. Is addressing protracted displacement, reversing the trend of growing numbers, which very much have to do with the fact that people yesterday in displacement are remaining in displacement today and tomorrow. It's providing more regular legal opportunities for migration and an international cooperation framework, whatever it is, and will take a long time to have it, on predictable and equitable responsibility sharing and bringing back in a rights perspective. Thank you very much.
Thank you.